It is very dangerous to put somebody into a position without making sure, A, that you've hired the right person, and B, that you've trained this person properly. Because you could have 500 people in your company, and 499 of them were trained and are amazing, and I happen to meet the one person that wasn't trained.
You're listening to the Vacation Rental Managers Podcast with Sarah and T.
Sarah stands for me, Sarah Bradford, a 15-year vacation rental company owner in Colorado who sold the company for big bucks last year.
And T stands for me, Tim Cafferty, who's still moving and shaking with two companies, Outer Banks Blue and Sandbridge Blue, in North Carolina and Virginia, respectively.
Between us, we have managed over 700 properties, making lasting memories for over 100,000 guests, and produced over 150 podcast episodes and counting, sharing all of our secrets to growing a profitable, long-lasting vacation rental company.
We like to call those secrets pullover moments, and it wouldn't be possible without support from our pullover partners, ICND, T-Data, and Sojo.
We're back and better than ever. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Tim. How are you doing today? Good powder day out west?
Yep, we got a foot of snow overnight. I was on the slopes by 8:15, skiing the trees, and I'm back here to record with a very special guest, Tim.
I know you're excited as I am to get this guest on here. We have a world-renowned speaker with us today.
World-renowned.
Yes. Shep Hyken is with us today. I had the pleasure of seeing Shep at the Customer Service Revolution Conference in Cleveland, Ohio, this past October. You were fabulous. That's the best magic trick I have ever seen, by the way. Welcome, Shep.
Hey, well, magic may have been what I used to be known for when I was a teenager. I still incorporate a little bit of that in my speech, and thanks for the compliment. The John DeJulius program is amazing. He's been doing it now, gosh, how many years? At least a dozen, maybe more. I was at number one, number two, and whatever the last one was. So I'm a three-peat offender.
Well, he was lucky to get you. Shep, just in case the audience has not heard of you, you've written 8 books. Is that right?
You know, I actually, at least 7, maybe 8.
All right. And you are the chief amazement officer at Shepherd Productions since 1983. So you've been doing this quite a while. I love chief amazement officer. And then National Speakers Association Speaker Hall of Fame. You speak beautifully. And then your client list includes companies that wouldn't even consider talking with us: American Airlines, Anheuser-Busch, AT&T, Aetna, American Express. And that's just the A's, Shep.
You have a lot of people in the A's. That's then, about it. No,
I think you've published articles, Tim. Where's he published articles?
Everywhere.
Yeah. He's, I'm telling you, he's the real deal.
Well, and enough about me. How about you and your audience? Let's get into that, because they don't need to hear about this guy's good. Let's just assume that anybody you have on the show is good.
That's absolutely good. And that's the thing, is that you focus on customer experience, customer service culture, this loyalty mindset, and our listener base loves to talk about this. It's like a drug. So let's get into it, Shep.
By the way, I'm just going to mirror what you just said and maybe say it a little differently. It is a mindset. I'll go a step further and say customer service is not a department. It's a philosophy. It gets embraced by everybody. It's not just what happens when something goes wrong. It's part of the entire process. Customer experience, which is even bigger than just service, is not just a strategy. It's also part of that philosophy. It needs to be ingrained in the culture. It needs to be started with the leader. And it permeates down throughout however big the organization is to the person that was just most recently hired. So everybody is involved in the experience in some way.
I love that you embody that. But I think many of our listeners, and myself, I'm guilty as well. Customer service training is something we did last July, and we need to do it maybe next June. But that's not the way to do it, right?
Well, I always say training is not something you did. It's something you do. It's ongoing. We have this exercise that we've been doing for almost 30 years now with our clients, and it's a real simple exercise, and I'm going to share this with you. It is the number one culture-changing exercise for a company, regardless of their size. It could be 2 people. It could be 2,000 or 20,000. It's a simple idea. Take an index card. Write down an example of when you created a great experience for a customer in the last week. That's it. Bring it to a team meeting and have a few people share this. As we do this again and again and again, you'll find some people say many of the same things. I had an assistant that said, I called somebody back quickly. That was like every 3 weeks, she used that one. The second week, I emailed somebody back quickly. And you get the idea. But she recognized that speed was really important to making our customers feel they're being heard and noticed. That was great. Now, we did talk about trying to elaborate on different ways to create amazement. But ideally, and really, the point is this. We want to create service awareness. And by forcing everybody to write an example down of when they created the experience is the idea. So what I don't want you to do is say to somebody, think back a week. What I want you to do is assign it between now and next week. Because here's what happens. People will wait until it's time to turn it in or right before the meeting before they go, okay, what did I do last week? And all we're asking somebody to do is say, when was I nice and did something right for the customer? It's not that big of a deal. And they get a little brain pain from that. And really quickly, if you do this on an ongoing basis, they'll recognize the power of capturing the moment and just jotting it down about the time that it actually happens rather than wait 4 or 5 days. So we call that creating service awareness. You do this enough and long enough and everybody will get on that track of being aware. The second part of this exercise is to go beyond just that moment of magic, as I like to call it. And what other ways can you say, tell me when you proactively solved the customer's problem before they even knew it. Tell me about a complaint that you had and how you resolved it. So those are examples of how you can change up the exercise. Sarah, you want to say something really important?
Well, yeah, my friend Anna Claire in Nashville teaches at a fancy private school. And she was just sharing with me that the way we learn, she looks a lot at how kids learn to read and how they absorb information. And one of the things she was just telling me is we learn a lot better. We learn the content a lot better if we speak it, if we have to regurgitate it. And so this falls right in line with that. If you don't just tell your staff, be nice, do all these things, and you're just teaching them, but they have to say what they did, I think that goes deep. And then that's how they act more in their daily life, that they're learning that more deeply. Is, I guess, what I'm
exactly saying. The point. And the first thing they're doing is they're writing it down, which in a way is just regurgitating it, whether they're saying it or writing it. The second thing is they're bringing it to a meeting. Now, if you've got 25 people in that meeting, you do not want to do 25 examples every week. Just randomly choose two or three and don't tell the people who you're going to choose. So everybody's going, I better come prepared or else it's going to be very embarrassing.
Yeah. Always embarrassment's always a motivator.
You are wearing a shirt that says be amazing or go home.
Yes.
And I wrote down from your keynote how to be amazing. It's to be better than average all the time. Expand on that if you would.
Better than average is an easy thing to do. Here's why. It's hardly any, a little bit, tiny bit, hardly any bit better than average is what you need to be. And what that means is the greatest part about this, and I'm going to kind of jump around, is I interviewed and got to know Horst Schulz, who's the first president of the Ritz-Carlton chain. And he and I talked many times. We were on programs together. And I once asked him, and I did it while we were recording, so he couldn't back out. He couldn't squirm out of it. How much better than average do you have to be? If you're on a scale of 1 to 5, where 1 is lousy and 5 is amazing, 3 is like right in the middle, how much better than a 3 do you have to be? And he goes, about 10% better. So basically, that's like 3.3 out of 5. Now, how do you get 5s when all you are is a 3.3? I'll tell you why. Because average will get you a 3 or a 4, but never a 5. But the tiniest bit above average is what gets you there. And I asked him to give me examples. He goes, we just use our guest names and we use it the right way. And anybody can use a guest name. As soon as the guest arrives, the person at the door looks at the luggage tag and says, are you Mr. Hyken? Yes, I am. Oh, Mr. Hyken, welcome to the Ritz. They take me to the front desk. This is Mr. Hyken. He's ready to check in. Later on, walking through the lobby, and that person that checked me in says, how's your room, Mr. Hyken? They're using my name. Not a big deal. Where's the restroom? Let me show you. Not go down there, go down the steps, make a right. You'll see it down there. They don't walk you into the restroom, but they walk you toward the restroom. Little things like that are what make the difference. And I think that's so important. Once in a while, a problem's going to drop in your lap. I know that our listeners might have a guest at a home that calls and says, oh my God, no housekeeping was here. Now you have a big problem. And then you move into the emergency level to take care of things. Okay, that's a big one. that falls in your lap, but you can't wait for big ones to fall in your lap to create, you know, to go from misery to magic and create these, as I refer to them, moments of magic. So amazement is simply, now there's one other way, being better than average all the time, or, and this is always what you would consider better than average, just simply meeting my expectation 100% of the time. If you do that, you're winning, because most companies can't do it all of the time, but they're always so friendly. They're always getting back to me quickly. Mm-hmm. They always take care of me when I have a problem. They're always knowledgeable when I have a question. The word always followed by something positive, and we'll add this one. Even when there's a problem, I know I can always count on them. So always mm-hmm. is consistent, and then whatever the issue is, that's the magic that happens.
Do you ever get nervous, though, when you have to say someone's name and it's a weird name?
I ask, can you tell me how to pronounce this?
Yeah.
Then they laugh and they go, don't worry if you mispronounce it. Because the fact is, I've tried to pronounce it properly and ask, can you help me with this? They love that.
Right. At least I'm trying. Okay. So, Shep, I've heard you say that at any given time, only one person represents your brand, which is scary for us. Because a lot of us have companies with 50, 75 employees, and some of them just got hired last week. And some of them are like the cleaners who have never really spoken and been trained how to speak to customers. They're kind of behind the scenes, but the guest walks in, there's the cleaner. They represent our brand. Talk about that.
You can look at it this different ways. I call it the awesome responsibility. I also refer to it as the CEO of the moment. Because at any given time, these people on the front line do represent your brand. I'll give you an example that I use in my speech, and that is I talk about when I brought my kids back when they were very young to McDonald's for breakfast. Used to take them to breakfast at least once a week on the way to school. We'd stop at McDonald's. One morning, we walked in. My son was 9. My daughters were 6 and 4. And the woman knew exactly what they were going to order for breakfast. And she told them, I know what you're going to have for breakfast. And they were blown away. And my son goes, how does this person know? And my other younger daughter, 6 years old, said, Dad, I think that's the same person that was here last week. And it was that particular woman. It was the first day she'd ever worked at McDonald's, or maybe not the first day, but the first time she was allowed to take care of a guest. And it was our family without the help of her boss. So she very clearly remembered us. Now, we sat down, and my son, still bewildered about how this woman would know. And we would come back like 2 months later. How does this person know? And my 6-year-old will laugh. Dad, it's the same person, which proves that the female brain definitely progresses at a much faster rate than the male brain. But that's for another subject, another day, et cetera. But one of these times, my daughter, as we walked out, said, Dad, the people at this McDonald's are amazing. And really, she wasn't referring to the people, even though we saw other people. Somebody was cleaning a table. Somebody was in the back making food. But this one person is the only one that interacted with us. This was this very nice lady. And that one person at that moment, at least in my daughter's eyes, represented all of the employees in the brand. So if our guests walk into a home and they see a housekeeper slash cleaner, whatever you want to call them there, that person needs to represent our brand the way we want it represented. So it is very dangerous to put somebody into a position without making sure, A, that you've hired the right person, and B, that you've trained this person properly. Because you could have 500 people in your company, and 499 of them were trained and are amazing, and I happen to meet the one person that wasn't trained. They may be amazing, they're just not ready to go to the front line yet. By the way, sometimes it doesn't take much. Sometimes it takes a half an hour, an hour of people skills to get them at least started, and a good manager that will help coach them. But if I talk to that one person, that's who I believe the whole company is all about. Every employee's just like that one, aren't they? Because here's what we say. I like doing business with them, or I don't like doing business with them. Them, T-H-E-M, it's plural. Okay. And it has nothing to do with our woke society. It has to do with the number of people working at a company. So, or they, them, whatever. So you get what I'm talking about.
It's funny when you said that, I thought about how my husband used to run a bar, and we would be walking through the mall and he'd go, see that guy over there in the Limited? He likes gin and tonic. I'm like, what? How do you know that? But I also always say that, like, we manage many different properties, and if you have 300 properties that are incredible, just like 300 employees,
yep.
But you have one property that's crappy and a guest stays in that property, they think that's what you have. It's the same concept, everybody. Right. Listen to what Shep's saying.
Yep. So product quality is really important. But it also, if you need to recognize this, product quality is part of the customer experience. So the quality of that home or rental that you have has to be in line with the rest. And by the way, the opposite is also true. If you've got this unbelievable top tier property, rental, home, whatever you want to call it, you're the experts in what you do. I know enough to be dangerous about what everybody listening is doing. And then they stay at one of your not so top tier. You've got to recognize, or you've got to warn them, you know, what you're buying now is different than the last time you were here. Mm-hmm. It could be a different price point, could be at a different resort, could be a number of different reasons.
Another thing that factors in that, I think I heard you say at some point, Shep, is their experience with any company impacts their experience with you. They aren't judging me against the vacation rental company down the street. They're judging me against Southwest Airlines, Amazon, Hertz, whatever companies they deal with. How about that?
Yeah. So the gist of it is these companies that are delivering rock star performances when it comes to the customer experience are setting the bar for everyone, not just others in their industry. So when I'm talking to a vacation rental company, I'm online doing the reservation. Perhaps it's more cumbersome than I'm used to. Again, I don't know if this is accurate or not, but let's say your way of doing it is perfect. But let's say I'm dealing with a competitor and it's really hard to figure out. Well, they're going, why can't they be as easy as going on Amazon, picking out an item and checking out? You know, it should be that easy. Now, I have a great experience on Southwest, as you mentioned, American Airlines, which is typically the airline I fly based on where I live. So I have a really easy time navigating their website. As soon as I go to another airline's website, if it's not intuitive as what I'm used to, all of a sudden I'm having a tough experience. And maybe it's just I give people the benefit of the doubt. But I will say if I go back there a second time, a third time, and I'm just not having a good time, guess what? I'm going to try to find something that's easier. And I can't remember if when I did that program for John DeJulius, we talked about convenience and ease. Did I talk a little bit about that? I think I did. Yes. So the company that's easiest to do business with is going to win. And if we have an easier system, one less, how's that song go? One less bell to answer, one less egg to fry. I think that was by Burt Bacharach, Dionne Warwick. That was many years ago. And this is in my book, The Convenience Revolution. I wrote about how there was a Wall Street Journal recognized that they wanted people to subscribe to online to their publication. The more fields they asked that customer to fill out, the more likely, even if it was ever so slightly likely, but they tracked and it was more likely that they would abandon the checkout process because that extra field frustrated them. Mm-hmm. So eliminate the tough stuff, eliminate the friction, eliminate the steps that are unnecessary. You know what they figured out? If our customer buys from us, we don't have to ask them every question right now. We can get to know them a little bit later. We can ask them where they live, whatever other questions might be important for me to get a total profile. But right now, I just want to get them signed up and in the system.
Boy, this is good stuff, Shep, and I don't want to interrupt this conversation. I know Sarah also has a point she wants to make about websites. But before we go any further, we need to take a break, a podcast partner break, with our friends at Key Data.
Hey, it's Daniel from Key Data. Right now, Shep is sharing some incredibly valuable customer behavior insights. But don't forget that it's equally as valuable to share those actions with your homeowners. You've really got two main customers, your guests and your owners. So here's a couple of tips for keeping it simple for your homeowners to work with you and easy for your guests to rent from you. Providing homeowners with updates on major market trends helps them adjust expectations and boost their satisfaction. So first, showing them a benchmark of their property's performance against the market goes a long way. Further, you can simply send an owner report monthly or quarterly, like the one in your Key Data dashboard. And finally, try scheduling a monthly owner webinar to discuss the area's performance as a whole and see what kind of feedback you get. Now, when it comes to simplifying the process for renters, information is key. Make sure your listings are updated with photography, virtual tours, and listing descriptions that encompass all the amenities that the unit has to show. This will not only save you time answering questions, but it helps guests feel more confident when they're making their booking decisions. Try this stuff and start seeing great results in 2024.
Testing your systems is huge. Just your website. We try to get people to book on our website or call us, but mostly they don't call anymore versus VRBO or Airbnb, like we were talking about earlier before we started recording. And you wouldn't believe how many people have the worst checkout process. Of course they don't book there. And I think that the mindset is so much on price, like, oh, well, we're cheaper on our website than Airbnb. Yeah, great. But if it's a total pain to book you, I'm not going to come back to you again. That's why I'm going to go to Airbnb. So everybody needs to especially test all of their systems to see the friction, as you said. Another thing you've talked about that I just love, Shep, is this whole thing of I'm fine.
Yeah.
And I've noticed it so much when I'm a customer and they say, how was your dinner tonight? And I say, it was fine. And they're like, great, that's so great. Okay, bye. And I'm like, but what I meant was it wasn't fine. Why didn't you ask me? So talk to us about how you've explored that.
When they did ask you, what they didn't do is ask a second question. And so the word fine, I explain, is the F-bomb of customer service and experience. It's a four-letter word. It starts with F. And what it really means, if you break it down, is F-I-N-E. F is that friendly smile that says, I'm smiling, but it's really a fake smile. I is insincere feedback. And that's what that fake smile is. N may stand for never coming back. And E is it's emotionless. All you did is take my money and gave me an average experience at best. That's why I refer to it as fine. And on the scale of 1 to 5, fine is a 3. 3 is average, satisfactory, mundane, mediocre, trite, pedestrian. I do crossword puzzles, so I know all these words. And you've got to be better than that. That's why I say a little bit better than average consistently and predictably is what takes you to getting a 5 on a scale of 1 to 5 or a 9 or a 10 with a net promoter score. So we're looking to be a little bit better than that. Now, if I have a customer or a client or a guest that says the experience was fine, I'm going to ask them, what do you mean by that? I want to know. It's that simple. How was the service? Oh, our server was great. Fantastic. But you said everything was fine. Did you mean it was great or did you mean it was just okay? They may tell you, by the way, if they use the word like an adjective, like mighty fine, wonderfully fine, then you're okay. But if they just say fine by itself, find out what they mean by fine. By the way, fine is a customer that says it was okay. Give me a chance. And we asked some new questions on our 2024 survey to understand better what customers will do when they receive average experiences. And I saw preliminary information. We haven't got everybody's results back, but it looks to me like, yes, customers that have an average experience may try you again, but the first time they see somebody that's much better, they're moving on and going to give somebody else a shot. We've got to remember that. Fine is not fine.
I think every husband in the country and there you go. Overseas can understand this concept very well.
In my speech, I talk specifically, I look for somebody, sir, are you married? Yes, I am. How long have you been married? 18 years. Oh, that's the hardest year. It doesn't matter what year they say. And then I'll say, have you ever talked to your spouse and that person when you say, is everything okay? And the response is, everything's fine. What does fine mean? And almost every time the person says, I'm in trouble.
Absolutely.
Time is flying here, but I want to touch on one other aspect I think our listeners can really get a lot out of. And you explained a 6-step I'll be back process.
Yeah.
It really resonated with me. There were certain questions we need to ask ourselves to make sure that customer comes back. Can you touch on some of that for us?
Sure. And this comes straight out of the book, I'll Be Back, How to Get Your Customers to Come Back Again and Again. And no intention of ever thinking it had anything to do with Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Terminator. But about 3 sentences into my outline, I recognized that this was the guy that made that line famous. So let's just give him a little head nod. And so anyway, here is what the 6-step process is. It's actually 6 questions. I'm going to go through them really quickly, but you should take an entire morning, if not an entire day, to go through these and really drill down and get the answers. Number one, why would someone do business with us? And don't just say we have great service, because that's exactly what your competitors will say. Is there something you do? Is there some, like, you stay at one of our luxury properties for a week and we're going to give you a chef for the night? No one else does that. Okay, there's an example of doing something different. What do the competitors do that you don't do? That's your second question. Number three, is there something that they are doing that you aren't doing and could be doing? And then what you should do is make it your own. I use the example of newspapers. I call it the amenities wars at the hotel world, when somebody said, I'm going to give somebody a free newspaper. That's what we're going to do for our business travelers. So when they came in, they checked in and said, by the way, tomorrow morning when you go to get your coffee, we have a free newspaper for you. And the hotel across the street said, did you see what they're doing? We need to give them free newspapers too. And then somebody said, well, we could do that and just copy them, but why don't we make it better? Why don't we put it on their doorstep? So when they just open the door in the morning, it's right there. Great idea. But there's an example of taking somebody's idea and plussing it. So that's step three. Step four is to look outside of your industry, back to something you mentioned earlier, which is, Tim, when you said that we're not compared to direct competitors, we're compared to others. So look outside of your industry and talk about the companies that you love and why you love them. And it's really important that you give clear reasons for the why. And then step five is to say, what are these companies doing, the reasons you love them, that you're not doing, that you could be doing? And now you're looking outside of your competition for ideas to be better. And finally, step number six, or question number six, that doesn't have to happen that day. That's going to happen after you've implemented some of these ideas. And you come back and ask a similar question to the first question, which is, now that I've implemented these ideas and thoughts that we've learned from competition and from companies even outside of our industry, now why would someone do business with us? I think I did that faster than I've ever done it.
It's amazing.
I mean, so we used to do retreats when I owned businesses. We did retreats twice a year. Tim does retreats with his staff. I think that six-step process just outlined an entire day the management of the company, yep, or even all employees could do, mm-hmm, in breakout groups. You just outline the whole thing.
Yeah, that's the point. You're not going to spend 5 minutes going through these. You're going to take a half a day, a full day. And I love the idea of bringing not just leadership in, but people on the front line from different departments. If you know, it depends on the size of your company. If you've got 20, 25 people, bring them in and make this part of the daily activity that you're going to do at that meeting. And I devote at least 3 or 4 hours to it.
Are we ready for rapid fire?
I'm ready. Ready?
Yeah.
I'm holding on.
I want to talk for another 5 hours, but instead we'll go to rapid fire.
Okay. It is. This is our inane little game, Shep, that we play with our guests, where we ask you off-the-wall questions, and you can answer in a few words or more wordy if you like. So, Happy, start the clock. Shep, what's the best piece of advice you ever got?
Always. No, maybe it was never. No, I can't remember. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to say it was advice, but it was something I observed. And I think it's turned into advice that I now take upon myself, and I treat my family this way, my kids. There's a reason I'm an entrepreneur. It's because my dad was an entrepreneur. My grandparents were entrepreneurs. And I take a look that all three of my kids are doing exactly what they want. Even though one is working for a company, she's still doing exactly what she wanted since she was five. And I think that's been my best advice, is to do what I love. And I've told my kids, do what you love. It doesn't care if you went to the fancy school and you want to be a chimney sweeper. If that's what you love to do, you're now an educated chimney sweeper. I just want you to enjoy life. I want you also to be good.
Of all the 7 or possibly 8 books you've written, if someone was going to buy their first Shep book, which one should they buy?
You know what I would do? I would go to Amaze Every Customer Every Time. Now, that's a pretty robust book, and I think that encompasses a lot of my philosophies. You can start at the very beginning with Moments of Magic. That's the basic core, but I mention and talk about that in every book. Another great book is Cult of the Customer, because it has a lot of the exercises that we do in our training programs. We give that to the reader, and they can make copies and do it with their teams as well. But I think for the most content that's actionable in your industry, Amaze Every Customer Every Time.
Okay, I'll edit that.
You don't need to edit. It is what it is, because I just subtly slipped in Be Amazing or Go Home. Which, by the way, is another book. It's all about, that's about attitudes and habits that great people have in creating a great experience for their colleagues and their customers. So, you know, that's why they're all going to work.
Speaking of books, how about a book that wasn't written by Shep Hyken that might be your favorite?
Wow, that's easy. And that is The Experience Economy by Joe Pyne and Jim Gilmore. One of my all-time favorite books, perhaps one of the greatest business books ever written.
Wonderful.
Of course, I could have mentioned my friend John Vigilius's book, but why go there?
Yeah, I thought that was what was coming. I like to speak in public, but I always feel like I could get better. What's your one tip for people that want to speak, teach, and talk in our industry?
There's many tips, but I'm going to give you three quick ones. And that is, number one, know your content. Even if you have to use notes, I'm okay with that. But you should know it well enough that if you drop the notes, you can keep going. Number two, know who your audience is. Even before the show, I said, I want to refresh. I remember meeting you, Tim, in Cleveland, but I wanted to know, who is our audience? So I knew that. You'd sent me information about that whenever we decided to do the podcast. I just wanted to make sure I understood this audience. Number three, know yourself. I cannot go to bed at 2 a.m, wake up at 7 and be ready to do a podcast like this, let alone a speech on stage. So I've got to know, I don't want to eat right before I go to bed. I don't mind eating everything. I just don't want to eat a huge steak right before I walk on stage. I know myself well enough to know what I need to do to make sure that I'm going to give the optimum performance. So know your material, know your audience, know yourself.
Speaking of tips, you travel a lot. You have a good travel tip for people, especially to do airline travel.
Wow. Well, there are two types of luggage. There's the overhead luggage, and then there's lost luggage.
Amen.
I don't know if that's a travel tip. I will give you another one. Don't ever take the last flight out because you may need a backup. Don't eat the airline food in coach. Sometimes it's good, unless it's hermetically sealed.
Okay, next question. What physical athletic thing are you afraid to try?
Oh my gosh. So I probably at this point in my life do not want to play professional football. But you laugh. So I play ice hockey. I play 4 days a week when I'm healthy. I actually had back surgery 3 weeks ago, but I'll be back on the ice in a few months. I play 4 days a week, and I didn't really start playing until I was 40 years old. I played one partial season when I was 12. Some of my classmates I play with, we were talking one day, and we were talking about fears. I said, one of the reasons I play hockey is I address the fear I have of just getting out there and being a little physical. Because when I grew up, I went to an all-boys school with all these guys I'm playing hockey with. They made us play football. It was like a requirement. We only had 50 kids in our class. So by the time you get to the varsity level, there's not a lot of kids to be on the team. They made you play football. I was scared to death. And then I realized it doesn't hurt that much if somebody bumps you. So I do that. I like to push my fear. I didn't want to go bungee jumping, but I was going to New Zealand, and I thought to myself, well, I'm going to tell people I'm going to do it because I tell enough people that I have to do it, right?
And you did it?
I did it. Yeah, I jumped. I jumped off the bridge. It was a blast. I jumped out of a plane. My son challenged me. 18 years old, he graduates high school. He goes, I want a parachute lesson, skydiving lesson. I go, okay. And he goes, and you got to do it with me. I go, okay, I'll do it. And why would anybody want to jump out of a perfectly good plane?
Okay, so this may not be a good question for you, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I just have a couple of more standard ones to do, and that's a skill or talent that you do not currently possess that you wish you had.
Wow, I've never thought of that. I think I write a lot. I would like to be a better grammarian so I don't have to rewrite. How's that? I'm pulling one from deep in the vault to pull that one out.
Okay, your favorite movie ever?
Well, there's several of them. I'm a big fan of The Wizard of Oz, one of my favorites. I think I enjoyed this movie when I was a kid. It was called Capricorn One. James Brolin, O.J. Simpson, Hal Holbrook, and it was a great movie about how these astronauts were going on Mars, and they pulled the astronauts out because they knew that when the spaceship went up, it was going to explode. So they saved the astronauts, but they put them on a soundstage in the middle of the desert, and they shot videos if they landed on Mars, and they realized, wait a minute, they've got to kill us because too many people now know what's going on. And we've got to come back in and talk about our experience. And they realized that. So it was all about their escape. And it was an incredibly fun movie. But if you look at it now, it's like, really? That was cheesy.
Yeah, so many old movies seem cheesy now.
Yeah, I love Heaven Can Wait. That was a great one with Warren Beatty, that version of it. So.
All right, last one from me. You're getting hyped up for your conference speaking engagement, and you're listening to that jam, that tune that really gets you going. What's that song?
This is easy. It's my walk-on music. Bonnie Raitt's hit song, Let's Give Them Something to Talk About. And that's what I want everybody to do. At the end of the customer experience, do we give them the experience that they will positively talk about to their friends, colleagues, family members? So if I could play it and sing it, I would. Let's give them something to talk about. She talked about love. We talked about experience.
Let's give them something they can't live without. Isn't that the next line of that? Let's give them something they can't live without, or something.
Yeah,
like that.
That's love. Something like that. Yeah.
All right. My last question for you, Shep, is why is your name Shep?
Oh, you're not going to believe this. I did not know this until, gosh, I was an adult. I just thought my parents thought the name Shepherd is the actual name, Shepard, was some crazy name they decided to name me. My middle name is Alan, Shepherd Alan Hyken. Alan Shepherd went up in space. Was I named after him? No, nope. He was a year after I was born. So what was the deal? My dad died, and one day my mom let it slip that when she was in college, she had a crush on a guy named Shep. And my father went to his grave never knowing that's the reason my mom pushed for the name Shep.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Well, now the whole world knows.
Now the whole world knows. Yes. And my sister's name is Kim, and my great-grandmother, who lived until I was in my early 20s, she said, I remember when they named you, and I just kept thinking when your mom was pregnant with the second one, what are they going to name that one?
Well, as usual, you win nothing for playing our name little game. But if there was a prize, you would win because you did a fantastic job.
Thank
you
very much.
Our undying thanks.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You guys are awesome. You're great hosts. I love the back and forth, the frickin' frat, the A and B.
We've been called worse, but yeah, that's
yeah,
that's pretty much
us. Kind of bad. Shep, before we say goodbye, I do want to tell the audience how, besides buying all your books, whether there's 7, 8, or 12 of them, how else can they work with you? Tell us about what you do on a daily basis.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you sat on a plane next to me and said, what do you do for a living? I would say, have you ever walked away from a business and thought, wow, that was an incredible experience? Well, that's what we help our clients do. So I'm hired to speak at events, conferences. I have trainers that go out and deliver my content at a training and a much deeper level. We do influencer work for people in the industry who want to be known for the tools that you would use for customer service and experience. I'm well known in the contact center world. Imagine that. Talk about customer service. So that's what I do day in and day out. I just live, think, breathe customer service and experience. And it's my passion, and it's been that since I was a kid.
So if a vacation rental company of some size thought, I want to bring someone like that into our retreat or bring for a couple of days, they could hire one of your...
They can hire me. They can hire one of my trainers. Or you know what? Maybe we've got a tiny little company out there that has 2 employees that we can never afford, Shep. There's 2 ways to go about this. I have almost 9, maybe even 1,000 videos now on YouTube. You can go to... there's a track that has these weekly tips. I've got 1,000 articles that I've written. Just go to my website and it says articles and blogs and look for everyone that has a cartoon. That's been like the last 6 years. I write cartoons every week and incorporate an article around it, or maybe it's the other way around. There's lots of content, won't even cost you anything. And we have on-demand video-based training that's so inexpensive that any company of any size can afford it.
And the way to find Shep is at hyken.com, H-Y-K-E-N.
Pretty easy, H-Y-K-E-N, yep.
Very good. So there he is. He has written 8 books. He's the chief amazement officer at Shepherd Productions. He also won the National Speaker Association Speaker Hall of Fame Award for Lifetime Achievement. But now he's really at the big time. He's on the Vacation Rental Magic Podcast with Sarah and T.
I've made it.
We thank you so much for being here today. You're a joy in person, and you're even better on the podcast. Thank you again, Shep, for taking the time.
My pleasure. Thanks. And I look forward to coming back and maybe doing it again, a part 2 next time.
I think you should get hired to do a keynote at our big annual conference, but we have nothing to do with that other than to say that out into the world. So
that's right.
Maybe we'll see you in, where is it next year?
It's in Arizona.
Oh, yeah, it's in Arizona.
Yes. Let's do it.
All right.
Okay.
You hear that, VRMA? All right, sir. Great job as usual. Until next time, everybody. So long.
Bye-bye.
You've just listened to Sarah and T, the Professional Vacation Rental Managers podcast, hosted by Tim Cafferty of Outer Banks Blue and Sandbridge Blue, and Sarah Bradford, former owner of two vacation rental companies in Colorado, now advising other VR companies to thrive and grow. Today's episode was brought to you by their podcast partner, Key Data. Key Data provides access to granular, unique data for vacation rentals and hotels to navigate uncertainty with confidence. With deep roots in property management and data partnerships with all the leading experts in the vacation rental industry, Key Data goes deeper than any other data provider, giving you all easy access to data you need for information, critical pricing, marketing, and budgeting decisions. KeyDataDashboard.com is their website for you to find more information. Special thanks also to ICND for hosting Sarah and T's website. Sarah and T love to hear from their listeners. You can reach out to them on Facebook, LinkedIn, or their website, sarahandt.com. They always love to read a review on your favorite podcast app. Even better, if you like this episode, share it with a friend. Sarah and T will be back with a new episode very soon.